Shooting Bench. For the next hour, I'll be bringing you commentary and important updates on current events, as well as information on guns, training, preparedness, and other liberty-related issues. Let's get started. RAT right now. That was very abrupt. Well, here we are. Welcome to the Shooting Bench. 25th of February. Month's almost over already. And been interesting around here. We had the, I told you about all the snow we had. When was it? Thursday? I think I told you about it Friday. And it's been way interesting around here. We had our total wound up being about 2 feet here. And tried to get the one of our cars out. And that was fruitless. It's two-wheel drive, not a chance in the world. And not much chance of getting my truck out, so I chained it up. I told you I chained it up to pull that guy out of the ditch. Well, I knew this morning I was going to have to figure out some way to get that other car out, and I need to get this little trailer out that I had that I use a lot, both of which were in the yard, neither of which is anywhere close to dry land. So I had to chain up all the way around, chain all four tires to be able to pull the car out, and get that trailer out to solid ground. So it took me quite a while to get to town this morning. But it was fun. Anyway, so I guess I'm here. I've told all these stories. I guess I better go and find out if there's anybody in the chat room and if we have any sound. And I don't see anybody here yet saying 5x5. So did I just tell that story for nothing? Just tell that story all to myself? There's 5x5. Thank you, Nan. Thank you, Longslide. Longslide, good to see you. Hey, I got your message, by the way. And I understand your frustration with what's going on up there in your work. And I can tell you that I wish, other than the fact that you live in Washington, I wish I lived up there closer because I would be your man. I like that kind of work, and I did it for probably in different variations of it. Some of it was oil field, some of it was exploration, some of it was water, you know, different types of things. Probably 6 or 8 years altogether. So I would jump on that if I was up there. I'm not going to move to Washington to do it, but if I was closer, I would. But I was interested in your thing that you sent me. I understand exactly what you're going through, and it's very frustrating. All right, let's move on here. I don't think we talked about this. There's a group of politicians here that want to put combination locks on pill bottles. It's not enough just to make them childproof by having to push down on them or, you know, do whatever you have to do to get them open. They've been doing that for many, many years. Now they want to put combination locks on them. The lid itself has, you know, I don't know what it's going to cost to add this. You know, I think we did talk about this because I looked farther down in the story here, and it's going to cost, they say, about $2 or so a bottle to add to the extra. But we'll leave that go because I think I remember talking about that. I forgot to delete it here. Okay. I know we didn't talk about this one. This is, you know, the more stories that I get like this, and stand by, I'll have a story in just a minute. But, you know, I've mentioned this a time or two, and I think it's getting more serious. I'm starting to believe it a little bit more every time I do one of these stories. This is a story of a dairy farmer who's going to have to euthanize 4,000 cows, 4,000 milk cows. And this is in Clovis, New Mexico, Highland Dairy. Some of you, if you've ever been in that part of the country at all, you've heard of Highland Dairy. It's very, very popular around there. But he's planning to kill all 4,000 of his cows because 7 of his 13 wells have been contaminated with stuff from Cannon Air Force Base. Now, what this stuff is the foam that they use for fighting fires. They use the same foam for training. You know, they couldn't just use water or whipped cream or something. They had to use the real foam, and they put so many thousands and thousands of gallons on there that it's gotten into the groundwater, and it's poisoning the cow and in turn the milk. He says he's dumping 15,000 gallons of milk every day. He had to let his 40 employees go and plans to kill all 4,000 of his cows because his wells are contaminated. This has been going on for quite a while. It's been getting progressively worse. And, of course, the government says they're working on it. That's not going to help. And this isn't the only dairy being affected. This is quite a few areas, quite a few establishments around there are being affected by these. They're, I can't pronounce this word. It's called a PFA. It's maybe I can't pronounce it, polyfluoroalkyl substances. Polyfluoroalkyl. So that looks pretty close. PFAs is what they call them. And he said the last summer he learned about this stuff and found out that it was turn his life upside down, ruin his life. Not only were all of his cows and calves affected by this, but he himself has 8 to 10 times the normal level of these PFAs in his bloodstream. And his wife, more than likely the same thing. So he says, and I quote, "This has poisoned everything I've worked for and everything I care about. I can't sell the milk. I can't sell beef. I can't sell the cows. I can't sell crops or my property. The Air Force knew they had contamination. What I really wonder is why didn't they say something?" The Department of Defense has disclosed 121 installations where groundwater has been impacted by PFAs. This is, I'd like to say unacceptable, but that seems so benign here. I mean, it just doesn't do it any justice. This is, it's beyond frustrating. It's infuriating that they would, 121 installations where groundwater has been impacted. It probably wouldn't affect it or wouldn't affect it nearly as bad if they would only use the actual chemical when they had an actual fire. But, you know, a lot of these things don't go for months or maybe years without a fire. And during that time, they're continuing to train over and over and over. That's how you get good. That's how you establish competency and effectiveness in anything that you do, is to train and practice. But, you know, it looks like they could have used a different substance or built a containment thing around the airstrips lined with plastic, just like they do with the cyanide ponds, you know, that they in gold and silver mines and stuff, where they leach the gold out of rock using this cyanide. And they have open collection pits lined with very heavy plastic. They could have done the same thing with this. I'm sure it would have been expensive, but not as expensive as what it's going to be now. If I was this guy, my word, I would sacrifice every single thing that I could possibly find, borrow, beg, steal, and sue. Of course, eventually, you know, the taxpayer pays for it, unfortunately. But maybe, you know, we could put a stop to it and get some things changed around. He said the dairy, the owner said it's potentially been in the groundwater the whole time that I've owned the dairy here. He is the first dairy farmer to feel the impact of this, but he won't be the last. Not only are there 80,000 dairy cows in Curry County, local news stations report PFAs spreading slowly into the Ogallala Aquifer, which is the largest aquifer in the nation. Let that soak in just a minute there. This is the largest aquifer in the nation. There's evidence that PFAs are going into it. This aquifer spans 174,000 miles and parts of 8 states. Now, when it says it spans 174,000 miles, I'm assuming that's probably a circumference, not longitudinally, of course, because it would go to China or wherever. But anyway, Air Force authorities say they're working diligently to get the problem under control. Stop using the fire retardant stuff. That would help. Let's get that done first. I know that's probably harder than it sounds, but, you know, at the end of the day, that's what needs to happen. So if this was getting into the largest aquifer in the nation, how many people is this going to affect? How many farms, how many ranches, how many, people's wells and community municipal wells and stuff is this going to affect? Now, the EPA apparently they announced last week its intent to regulate the chemical by years. Why didn't they regulate this? They've known what was going on here. This didn't happen yesterday. And now they're saying they intend to regulate it here soon, by the end of the year. Why didn't you regulate it 10 years ago? Surely you could see what you worry about little bugs, and you worry about ranchers that have built ponds to sustain wildlife and to create irrigation ponds and stuff that don't hurt a damn thing. They don't block the water off. They slow it down a little bit and fill the pond, and it continues. The same amount of water continues on that. But you take these people to jail, you ruin their lives, you completely destroy them over these little ponds, and here's these damn Air Force doing this. Is going to destroy the largest aquifer in the United States, and you intend to do something about it next year, by the end of the year? There is something dramatically wrong with what's going on in this country that we're allowing to go on. This crap has got to stop. I can't even believe what I'm reading here. I am sick to death of this kind of stuff that continues to go on. So, there you have it. If you live anywhere on that side of New Mexico, you're going to be affected first, and the way they're talking, it's likely going to go much, much further. So, hold on here a second. All right. Let's move on here to something else before I get so damn mad I can't spit here. Let's look at here's something that's not nearly as dramatic as what I just read. It frustrates me. This don't make me nearly as mad. Let me go back and tell you what I started that last story with. There are things going on around the world, monumental problems. This can be everything from, the snowstorm that we had, not so much. That's how it used to be here all the time. Not a big deal. 10 years we've been without snow here. Matter of fact, it was it was 8 years ago that we had the last good snowstorm that I remember here, one time. But when I was a kid, Luna's only, it's not even 100 miles from here. So when I was a kid, I remember snowstorms every year where we'd go out from grandma's house and walk across the field and walk right over the top of fences without lifting a foot because there was, 4 and 5 feet of snow out there. We'd walk out there, going rabbit hunting or whatever. So this is not new. It's just, it's coming back. It's not a biblical disaster here that some people think it is. It's never been around it. But there are things going on. The Paradise Fire and those fires we had in Washington here 2 or 3 years ago and the flooding going on back east. Yes, I know it happens, from time to time. But it just seems to me that some of these are larger and more frequent. And, just all over the country, all over the world. And I think it just confirms that we are indeed living in the end times. Now, one could argue that you've been living in the end times since Jesus was crucified. The end times started then. But I think that it's becoming... It's escalating here, and some of this stuff is going to affect, thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, maybe millions of people. And the chances are that it may even kill a hell of a bunch of them. Or, it may be a long, drawn-out, painful death of some kind of cancer or something. But, I've thought about this when I think about the volcano in Yellowstone, the caldera, they call it. That'd be just one more thing to add to it. But, and then there's those say, well, it's just, you know, it's a natural progression of things, and it may be. But, the end times, son, is the natural progression of things. That's it. That's about as natural a progression as you possibly imagine. You don't get no more natural than that. All right, let's move on. This one's not as dramatic. It has nothing to do with the end times. But it does have something to do with something that ticks me off more and more every time I go somewhere and I hear this, and I hear it frequently. And you can get on certain Facebook pages and websites and stuff, and people just going off about it all the time. And that's the gold fringe on the American flag. Now, before anybody says anything about it on the chat room, and I have to call you out, let me tell you right now, it has nothing to do with anything. It's decorative. It's a celebration, celebratory type thing. It means absolutely nothing. It has never meant anything. It is not maritime law. It is not admiralty law. It is not any of that. It's decoration, folks. It's pretty. And, you know, they have it in churches. They have it. It means nothing. Now, a lot of people say that it allows these courts to do things that are unconstitutional. They're not following the Constitution because they're under maritime law. Well, I'll tell you what happened is that these courts have gradually been pulling away from the Constitution for years, and they're operating more under international law and things like that rather than constitutional law. It has nothing to do with the yellow fringe on the flag. Absolutely nothing. As a matter of fact, there's quite a few things to substantiate that here. One of them is, this comes out of the Army Study Guide. It said there is no record of an act of Congress or executive order which either prescribes or prohibits the addition of fringe, nor is there any indication that any symbolism was ever associated with it. The use of fringe is optional with the person, or organization displaying the flag. There's another one here from the book So Proudly We Hail, The History of the United States Flag. This is from the Smithsonian Institute Press, 1981. Says the placing of a fringe on our flag is optional with the person or organization, and no act of Congress or executive order either prohibits the practice, according to the Institute of Heraldry. Fringe is used, now this is not part of the quote, this is just another little description underneath it. Fringe is used on indoor flags only, as fringe on flags on outdoor flags would deteriorate rapidly. The fringe on a flag is considered an honorable enrichment only, and its official use by the U.S. Army dates back to 1895. A 1925 Attorney General's opinion states, the fringe does not appear to be regarded as an integral part of the flag, and its presence cannot be said to constitute an unauthorized addition to the design prescribed by statute. An external fringe is to be distinguished from letters, words, or emblematic designs printed or superimposed upon the body of the flag itself. Under law, such additions might be open to objection as unauthorized, but the same is not necessarily true of the fringe. So it's, I said celebratory a while ago. What I meant was ceremonial, not celebratory. But, anyway, there you have it. That's the thing about the gold fringe on the flag. All right, let's see. Is there anybody left in the chat room? I haven't looked over here for a little bit. Let me go see here. Nan, I thought, was here a little earlier. Oh, there she is. Looks like she just popped back in. Her internet must have failed there for a little bit. So, the Tinker's still hanging around, and Doc and Longslide, Mountain Shooter, and Nan, and Nan M. Glock, and Yakima Glock, and Tebow, and we got one anonymous there. So, alright. Let's continue to march here. Let's, it's not quite break time yet. So, like I said, I'm gonna ramble here for a minute until break time. because I got something I want to start that I don't want to stop in the middle of here. Hang on just a minute. Let me do this right quick. Stand by. Okay. As I said, what was it, Friday? I think what's going to happen here is I'm probably going to go to 2 days a week, Monday and Friday, starting about the 1st of April. Give everybody some time to get used to the new schedule here. It's not going to be an abrupt thing. I've got to advertise it and get it out. But like I said, this is, for DeTinker and I both, really, it's just taken up way too much of our personal time to still have to pay for every single thing that happens here. So we're going to cut back a little bit, and eventually, if later on, I may go to podcast only. Well, probably not. I'll probably keep the Friday night show, you know, even if I did stop everything else. But I promised when we started Just Measures that I would never stop this until the lights go out, and I just can't do it anymore. And I'm doing my absolute best to keep that promise. So at the very worst, what would happen is I would continue to do Liberty Lounge and call it quits, or call it a night, call it good, whatever. So, but that's not going to happen anytime soon. I'm just saying it may be a possibility on down the road. But right now, we may stick with Amy's show and my show on Mondays, and Liberty Lounge on Fridays. So until or unless something better comes along, that's going to be the plan for now, and we'll be right about the 1st of April. Let me look at the calendar here and see about when I think that might possibly, that's the wrong direction. So actually the 1st of April would be a Monday, so maybe the 1st of April would be a good time to look forward to that. So, all right. Okay, we're close enough to break time here. I'm going to take a little break, and we'll come back, and we're going to start talking about a whole nother subject here for a little bit. So stay.
I'll be back.
Oh, say, can you see? The dawn's early light, what so proudly we hail at the twilight's last gleaming. Oh, beautiful for spacious skies, for amber waves of grain, for purple mountain majesties above the fruited plain, from the lakes of Minnesota to the hills of Tennessee, across the plains of Texas, from sea to shining sea, from Detroit down to Houston and New York to LA. Well, there's pride in every American heart, and it's time we stand and say, God bless America, land that I love. America, America, God shed His grace on. Yeah.
Welcome back to another segment of the Shooting Bench, right here on the Survival Circle Radio Network.
Here we are. We're back. There's another thing that's been going on here, started, I should say in recent times, not real recently, but a long time ago, when I was doing this show on AM radio in Farmington, we talked about, I think we talked about it here too, a time or two, and that is church shootings. What we haven't talked about a whole lot was how to kind of put together a team, you might call it, to help avoid that. But if you check back in the entire decade, as far as anyone can find, there was not a single church shooting between 1975 and 1984. For 10 years, there was not a church shooting. Now, we know the church shootings go back, way back, to Revolutionary War times. And there's, you know, periodically there's been one or two, you know, throughout, you know, the history of modern man, I guess, or history of churches or whatever. But anyway, there was not one that they could find or one that made the news between 1975 and 1984. Only one occurred in 1985. And then it was 8 consecutive years after that that there was not one. There was one in 94, skip 4 years, one in 99. And then for the next 5 years, there was not one. Now, what they're calling these things are rapid mass murder, the mass shooting, RMM. So now pay attention from here on out. There was one rapid mass murder, one church shooting in 2005, one in 2006, one in 2007, one in 2008. Two in 2009, then we skipped a couple of years. There were three in 2012, and none for a couple of years, one in 2015. Now, we know there's been some since 2015, but they're not listed on this thing. And we're not the only ones worried about it, because the FBI actually has a training thing, for a security training for houses of worship. So it's gotten other people's attention. Remember, we talked about this a little bit. When was it? Maybe 2 weeks ago or so. We talked about different religions being included in the, not just your average church shooting, but some that were more frequent than others. And the Mormon Church was added to this list with the Jews and the Muslims and I don't forget what the other one or two was. But church shootings or church violence has been escalating quite a bit, especially over the last very few years. So, and we've seen also that, it says, let's see, any church is unheard of. Or church shooting at any church was unheard of for a long while. Abruptly, 5 years in a row, we had one or two a year. Three in 2012 made the churches the third most frequent active killer target after educational facilities and workplaces, but still ahead of malls and theaters and, you know, other places like that. Laws and rules and signs that forbid guns in these locations are obeyed only by the law-abiding. Now, there's a news flash for you. Criminals with homicidal intent are not dissuaded by laws, rules, or signs. In fact, it appears evident that they depend on these exact laws, rules, and signs for their own very own safety to guarantee that innocent victims will be disarmed and defenseless.
Clearly, being ready and prepared for a potential active killer attack is so much better than gambling with parishioners' lives by doing nothing to counter a documented existing threat. So, I told you that me and a law enforcement, a career law enforcement guy, come up with a program that we called CAP, a Church Active Assailant Program. He's not always an active shooter, not always, it may be any number of things. So, it's quite a program, and it's been implemented by a few churches around. It hadn't taken off nearly as well as we'd hoped for. We don't, it's not anything we make any money on. It's something that we're trying to do it just to help people out. And so, you know, if they want to do it, that's fine and dandy. Remember in 2007, there was a church shooting in Colorado Springs. A guy showed up with a rifle and at least two handguns, hundreds of rounds of ammo, and had mass murder on his mind. 12 hours before that, and 70 miles away, this same killer had already attacked the Arvada Missionary Church, murdering two and wounding two others. New Life is what they call a mega church, had about 7,000 parishioners on campus at the time of attack. Now, this guy arrived at the church and started shooting, you know, shot five, murdered, killed two, and wounded three, shot five right in the parking lot as soon as he got there. He wasn't waiting to get inside. Obviously, if he would have, I'm sure that the body count would have been immensely higher than that. But the fact that no one was harmed inside was because this church had a team, had a safety team, whatever you want to call it. This church was enlightened enough to form this group of volunteer armed security guards. And one of these security guards was a woman. Her name was Jeannie Assam. She was a former police officer. And right at the beginning of this, she was the very first act going towards the sound of the guns instead of away from them like the people in Florida did. What's the damn thing? Columbine and so many others where they either move away or hide out until the shooting stops. Well, this gal goes right straight towards the sound of the guns. And she went towards the entry point trying to keep him away from the congregation. She ran into him, opened fire, and with her personal weapon, a concealed firearm, she wasn't in uniform, didn't have a duty belt or nothing, she was carrying concealed. And police say that she, after the bad guy had, you know, been hit multiple times from this security guard, he wound up killing himself. Boy, that pisses me off too when they do that. And of course, Assam later said that God guided her and protected her, and didn't think for a minute to run away. But this assumption that these no gun signs are going to be obeyed by criminals or terrorists or, you know, active shooters or whatever is just absurd to me. It's so far-fetched and so freaking absolutely ridiculous that it just blows my mind to think that these people are going to walk up here. I get up in the morning and start making these plans, and you load up this AK-47, and you put, you know, six 30-round magazines in a drop pouch on your side, and you have a Glock 17 with a 32-round magazine in it, and another one sticking out of your pocket on the other side, and you said, you know what, I'm going to go here, and I'm going to kill as many people as I possibly can today. And when I get to the door, there's a no gun sign. I said, well, hell, I guess I'm going to have to go somewhere else. Do you honestly think that these people take 1 second of their time and even acknowledge that that sign exists, other than to maybe smirk and laugh at it just a little bit as they go in the door? I can't imagine how someone gets so stupid in one lifetime as to think that these signs have one tiny iota of effect on these shooters. Not one time has there ever been any indication that those signs have ever turned away a shooter. However, there are multiple times when the sight of a gun or the sound of a gun or the impact of a bullet has changed people's minds. Some of them it changed it forever. But there are few, I don't even know if there's one, where there was a defender in place that actually defended instead of hiding behind a car for 3 hours at a time or whatever, where the shooter was 100% successful. Did they maybe kill one or two? Yeah, unfortunately that happens. Did they kill 30? No. They killed 30 in Virginia Tech, 33, 32, whatever it was. I don't remember how many it was. But he wasn't challenged by anybody. You know, they have to call for cops to come from, you know, X number of miles away. How long does it take them to get there? And when they're challenged and when it's over, yeah, then it stops. But when there's a young, brave female with a revolver, I think it was a revolver if I remember correctly, stopped it right away. Did she stop the people from getting killed in the parking lot? No, she wasn't out there, unfortunately. But how many people do you think she saved for the number of guns that he had before he walked into that church? This is a no-brainer, ladles and jelly spoons. We don't have to think about this. As NRA guy said, the only best way to stop a bad guy with a gun is a good guy with a gun. Duh. Yep, that's how it works. And it works well, and it works every damn time. I can't think of any time. I may be wrong. I'm going to get back over on the chat room. I'm going to watch it here because some of you may have information that I don't have, especially, you know, Doc or Yakima Glock or you know, some of you that pay attention there to this stuff. But I can't think of any time when there was a good guy with a gun that went to stop one of these things and was killed and the rampage continued on. Now, I can think of one or two when a good guy was killed, but it ended the rampage also. I can't think of any time. So the concealed carry holder or the defender, the sheepdog, if you will, stopped it even if they died. And there's only one or two of those. But there's not one where the defender was killed that I know of, where the defender was killed and the rampage continued. So it works. It's never going to be perfect. There's always going to be somebody innocent get hurt or killed. Not always, but you know, frequently. Many times that's the catalyst. That's what has to happen before any other shooting goes on. You can't just say that guy looks suspicious. I think I'll kill him, and then we'll find out if he's up to no good or not. You know, he's got to, at the very least, has to produce a weapon or indicate in some manner that he has a weapon. You know, the term Allahu Akbar, they start hollering that. That's enough. That's enough evidence right there. But, and this is why I told you, you know, a month or two ago, whenever it was that I wrote this, about setting in church. It's on my blog if you haven't read it. And it's called See No Evil, Shoot No Evil. And that is now for the last several years, when there are prayers going on in church, I don't close my eyes like everybody else does. I don't think that it's required. I don't think that there's any written law or anything that says you have to. But in order to maintain a visual safeguard, visuals, you know, whatever, and to be able to see what's going on, I just don't feel like I can risk that anymore. And as long as you are sitting quietly with your arms folded, your hands, you know, clasped in your lap or whatever it is that you do, I think that is being plenty reverent enough to sit respectfully through a prayer. So that's my story, and I'm sticking to it. So let's see. There's a, hold on a second here. One second. Okay. Let's get back over here. There's another little deal here that says what these two different types of mass murders have in common. They were talking about going back. The best place to really get the a detailed, very good description of all this is to listen to Lieutenant Colonel Grossman's, David Grossman's Bulletproof Mind presentation. Man, that is amazing. It's definitely an eye-opener. It's a must. Amy got me that for Christmas or my birthday or something here quite a while back. And I've watched it a couple of times. And you can listen to it. You can get CDs. You don't have to get the, you know, spend the money on the videos. It's good because he draws some charts and graphs and stuff up there that go along with what he's saying. But you get the same benefit out of the CDs. But see, the difference between these two types of mass murders have in common is the fact that neither type of coward arrive at the crime scene expecting a fight. They fully intend to be totally dominant in their slaughter of innocents. They carefully select their target locations by ensuring that the victims are disarmed and utterly defenseless. And that's just the same thing we were saying a while ago with the no gun signs and stuff. So, when an active killer or terrorist pre-plans and scouts a facility or a church, they may judge it to be too hard of a target and pass it up for easier location. The harder appearing church has then won the fight without bloodshed or actual fighting. Now, this would be, you know, there's several churches around, and you can find these things on Facebook. You can do a search and see them where they have signs up that says, you know, you know, we have staff that is armed and trained and I forgot what the, you know, word for word what it says, but that would be, that's a sign that they notice. The no gun sign, whatever. When they've got a big sign out there on the marquee that says, basically, if you come in here and start any crap, we're going to kill you. Now, that's something that gets noticed. Not one of those churches has been attacked. Not a single one. If these people have any reason to believe that they're going to have any resistance, especially armed resistance, doesn't happen. And you know, he can call them cowards all you want. You know, a lot of them are not. They're just, you know, they have a problem. Some of them are just mentally toasted. But yeah, I could say that I know some pretty brave people that wouldn't intentionally go in against guns if there wasn't a real damn good reason to. It doesn't make them cowards. It makes them smart. And I tell people in my classes, a lot of these
shooters that we're seeing nowadays are smarter, more cunning, more savage than ever before in the history of modern man. They're not cowards and they're not stupid. They're smart and they're, you know, whether they're brave or not, you know, it's up for debate. You know, maybe, maybe not. But most of them, I think, are just mentally gone. They are not really thinking well here. Yakima Glock, you may very well be right there. I think the closing eyes during a prayer is more traditional than a scriptural thing. Yeah, I've never seen anything indicated anywhere that that's, you know, what the Lord expects of me. But, you know, I can tell you that there are certain, there's a certain class of people out there. Call them sheepdogs. Let's use Colonel Grossman's definition there. In our church, if you go back and look, there was two very distinct, polar opposite individuals that were, there's lots of different individuals throughout the history of the church, but I can name two of them that were diametrically opposed in the manner that they conducted their lives. One of them was my great uncle that we've talked about before, Jacob Hamblin. The other one was Porter Rockwell. Now, all of you may not be all up to snuff on how our church operates, but I can say that both of these individuals were temple worthy and, they were, as good as they come, but they were diametrically opposed in the way that they, opposites in the way that they conduct themselves. Jacob Hamblin was a missionary throughout the Indian reservations for years and years and years. Never, not one time, carried a gun. And this was back in, 1880 or whatever it was. I don't know exactly. It's been a long time since I read the book. But never carried a gun. Never had to fire a shot in anger. Never used anybody else's gun. He just didn't believe in them. It's not that he didn't believe in them. It's just that he felt that, what I'm doing, I don't need that. Porter Rockwell, on the other hand, killed a hell of a bunch of people. There are people that are placed in these positions where they are needed to do certain things. There are the sheepdogs, and there are the other ones. You can call them sheep if you want, or you can call them people that have other missions, other thoughts in life, rather than carrying a gun and doing this other stuff. These guys were total opposite, but my point is, and it's going back to what Yakima Glock says, it wasn't a script, the closing your eyes is not a scriptural thing. Excuse me. I'm going to cough in your ear there. Hold on just a second. I'll just take care of that right now. All right, that's better. My point was that in the eyes of the church, both of these men had the same standing. One may have been looked at by the membership as being undesirable. The sheepdog, as Colonel Grossman says, the sheepdog, they always want you to show up and take care of things when things go bad, but when you're done, they want you to get back in your cage. And that's how Porter Rockwell was. Jacob Hamblin, on the other hand, was the kindest, gentlest, everybody loves him. He never had a problem. It's a way interesting story to read the books on both of these men. It is extremely interesting. Whether or not you care anything about the church doesn't make any difference. They're just interesting books. So that's what I'm talking about when you have the people that say, we'll be protected, because we're going in God's house. No, that's not how it works. All these churches, and I've told you before,
these people that enter these churches do, they have their ability to make up their mind and choose their actions just like everybody else does. It may not coincide with what you think they're supposed to be doing. When they make up their mind to go do this, you can be wherever you want to be and think that you're safe and protected, but if everybody was not able to choose what they, if they were not able to choose their actions and do what they want to do, there would be no use of us being on this earth. We're here as a test, on a test, on a mission here, if you will, to see how we conduct ourselves and how we, with the decisions that we make. If all our decisions were made for us prior to what we do, there would be no reason for us to be here. Some of us make better decisions than others. The Yakima Glock, that's right. Faith without works is dead. There are people that we can get way deep into stuff here, but there are those that believe that all you have to do is believe and that you're going to be saved. It tells you right in the Bible that's not the case. That you need to do something with your belief, and if you plan to be saved. So I won't get any deeper into that. We could spend hours and hours on that stuff for sure. The mountain shooter, that's good. He said his church has armed ushers. That's excellent. And when that, if that word gets out, then I'm quite confident that there's not a high risk that you're going to be involved in having any shooting going on there. So let's see. Now here's a good for instance here. You know, some very small churches, you know, with a few like-minded people, they say that they encourage and they're fine with open carry and stuff. Most churches, that's not the case. Most churches, one of two things. They either don't like or forbid guns, or they're okay with them, but they'd rather not see them while they're sitting in church. And it's kind of what this guy says on this next deal here. He says a low-profile or plain-clothes approach is more comfortable to both the volunteers and the fellow prisoners. In most cases, I'd say that that's probably true. Not always. More importantly, having plain-clothes security is an important strategic and tactical advantage against a potential active killer. Maybe, maybe not. I think it depends entirely on the circumstances. Sometimes the sight of the gun may end the thing right there. But I also understand the point that he's trying to make here. He says, actually, any number of armed good guys with CCW permits is much preferred over disarmed innocents in church. I agree with that 100%. Some enlightened pastors have a welcome mat out for their prisoners with CCW. So, anyway, that kind of did in a nutshell there. There's a lot you can read on this, a lot of interesting stuff. And I'd encourage you sometime to there's a lot of books out there on Porter Rockwell and Jacob Hamblin, or quite a few, a lot, but there's a few. So, you know, pick one. There's one of them that is a one of my Jacob Hamblin that is pretty much in his own words. If I recall, he dictated and someone wrote the book. It's kind of a pretty much an autobiography. Really, really good book. And there's some other ones that were written by other people that knew him that were, you know, very much coincided with what he talked about in this, in his own book there. All right, well, we can just babble on and carry on here all afternoon. And we're just getting nowhere fast. So think what I'm going to do is start easing towards the door over here. Had a song all picked out and I was going to play and didn't do it. So I'll save it and do it next Wednesday. See if I can get all this stuff started here before I have to begin and leave you hanging with a bunch of dead air. I've got some other stuff Wednesday I think is going to be pretty interesting to you. I'm trying to gradually pull away from doing all news and kind of throw a song or two in, which I forgot to do this time, and talk about things that are a little bit more interesting than news. Now, there's a lot of times the news, interesting or not, it's essential that we hear it. It's just the way it is. So, all right, I think we're pretty well taken care of here. So I'm going to scoot on out of here. We'll see you all Wednesday, and I very much appreciate you all joining me. And I'm out of here.
Well, that wraps up another edition of the Shooting Bench. Join me Monday and Wednesday from 8 to 10 p.m. Pacific, and again on Fridays from 7 to 10 for the Shooting Bench. Good night, and thanks for joining me. No explanation, no reconciliation.